This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet Fuel.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast for the business development community, brought to you in association with The Advertist, business development tools and insight for creative marketing and communications agencies. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. I learned a wonderful lesson this week on the value of maximizing your social media presence from a very bright lady called Mei King Tsang, or Mei King T as she likes to be known. She explained how by using a few simple tricks you can increase the effectiveness of your social media, and in this case I mean LinkedIn, and develop an outreach campaign to prospects using the platform's algorithm. But more on Mei King T later. She'll be appearing on the show soon, so prepare yourself. We're all discovering new ways to engage with prospects and develop content to build relationships, and The Advertist is perfectly set up to do that. With a database of over 40,000 marketing, brand, C-suite, HR, PR and digital contacts at over 8,000 companies, and they all come with company and personal LinkedIn contact information, so you can seamlessly move between phone, email and social media when developing new business. The Advertist is also full of contact data, news, insight, tenders, mergers and acquisitions, and lists to power your next new business drive. It's updated every day, and the team do nothing else but focus on making your job easier, and they do it all for a price that any agency can afford. Now, isn't that reassuring? The Advertist gets you to the door. All you have to do is push through it. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com, that's theadvertist.com, for a free trial, or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, before we get into the main course, let's have a little amuse-bouche from our man Jeremy Davis, who this week wants to give us a sharp lesson in matching your new business content to the buyer.
Years back, I went to Edinburgh for the semi-finals of a stand-up comedy competition and got the chance to do 5 minutes of stand-up at the famous Gilded Balloon. I made people laugh, which was nice, but it turned out I didn't make the judges laugh, at least not enough. It turns out that jokes about 1980s pop culture icons the Transformers may please nostalgic Gen Xers like me, but they aren't sufficiently highbrow for the kind of broadsheet comedy critics they get to judge these things, who think that Optimus Prime is what Tina Turner would sing if she had to perform Simply the Best in Latin, or possibly the latest super premium tier offer from Amazon. Not for the first time there's a parallel here between my career at the sharp end of new business and the blunt end of comedy. You've got to fit your content to your audience. We can talk about the differences between sales and marketing services agencies. As I've always seen it, marketing is about taking your product to market. Sales is what you do when you get there. But one thing they really should have in common is which market they're going to in the first place. Just think about the famous little piggies. If the first little piggy went to market while the second one stayed at home, probably managing the farm's social media channels and sending out the odd email, it's little wonder they couldn't get enough roast beef to feed everyone. Just imagine how much better they could have done if the second little piggy had conducted a tightly focused communication campaign targeting customers at the market, rather than putting out a few generic tweets into the ether in the hope of catching the attention of some unknown random buyer. As for the fifth piggy who ran wee 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 all the way home, well, on the one hand, it shows the value of a highly tuned logistics operation. On the other, he really should have gone before he left. It's always astonished me that agencies who take such great pride in understanding their customers' customers, with all manner of fancy graphs and infographics mapping out customer journeys or aligning their needs to their brand onions. Why is it called a brand onion, by the way? If you spend too long peeling back the layers, it'll make you cry. And sometimes, when marketing directors realise how much they've paid their agency to design one, it makes their eyes water. Of course, the traditional way an agency identifies an audience is by buying a list of contacts, and there are some very fine lists available, not least from www.theadvertist.com. But that really is only the first step in targeting, not the whole race. buying the list and then going straight on to prospecting would be a bit like Usain Bolt coming out of the blocks in the 100 metres, sprinting 20 metres and then trying to long jump the rest of the way. And remember that there will be considerably more competitors in the new business race than the 7 Usain Bolt had to beat in the Olympic finals. The Five Little Piggies rhyme is an apt metaphor for the importance of keeping your sales and marketing efforts in alignment. After all, there were only 3 of them left by the time the big bad wolf came along. And some retailers might say, that brings us neatly back round to Amazon.
Well, the good news is that even though we've changed how we sell, the principles behind relationship building is still the same. So whether you're selling in person, whether you're selling online through the phone, whether you're trying to make connections on LinkedIn, the principles behind it are always the same. In personal relationships, they're typically built on like, trust, and alignment on values. Business relationships are not that different, except for one thing. People do business with companies they might not like, but they need. You're not necessarily friends with somebody that you don't like, unless your wife makes you.
One thing about the job of sales is that you never stop getting better. Every contact, every conversation helps you grow and improve. Your sales skill is like a muscle that needs constant development. And to continue that analogy, my guest this week is going to put some Rocky in your repping. Here at the Fuel Studios, we wanted to bring on someone who's a purebred sales leader, and he advises leading blue chip companies in North America on how to align their sales and their marketing. And we wanted to pick his brains, for free of course, to give you a sales strategy strength workout for remote new business development. We also invited 3 listeners to phone in and put our guest to the test by asking him advice on some of the sales issues that keep them awake at night. So let's cross over and join me and Jeff Swan for this week's episode of Fuel.
So to paraphrase Pink Floyd, so you think you can sell. We all like to think we can sell, it's what we do. But we wouldn't have a podcast if everyone was an expert, because we'd all be so confident that we were doing our job so well, we wouldn't need any advice. But would you have the confidence to tell some of the best and brightest organizations in the country that you could fine-tune their sales teams like AMG does to a Mercedes engine, or Cosworth does to Ford, or WiseTech for Aston Martin? My guest this week does. If you've been listening to these podcasts in order, you'll have noticed an evolution of the type of conversation from basic PR and promotion into the finer points of new business and its sometimes rocky relationship with marketing. As we've discovered recently, C19 has forced companies of all sizes to review their status and find a new quo. Specifically, we've noticed the rise in the stock of the new business manager within companies, the increased focus on sales. Now, Jeff Swan is actually a bit of a nerd when it comes to sales. He runs a business called RevUp, who guarantee to get your B2B team on track and smashing revenue targets in 90 days or less. His knowledge covers areas of sales that I didn't even know existed. Now, I recently interviewed Matt Brown of the South African sales development company Digital Kung Fu, who outlined why sales and marketing teams have trouble getting on. So it's only right that we dig a little deeper on this and find out what it is that's bugging some of our business developers in the UK, and see if Jeff could offer some simple tips to help supercharge their sales. So I asked him if he'd come on and play Agony Uncle for the day and let some of our listeners relax on the fuel couch, kick off their shoes, put their feet up, and lay some niggling sales questions on him. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and for the fantastic intro.
You're welcome. It's become part and parcel of the show. Big build up, and then I let it go right after that. But big question: are you ready for this? Because it's all a bit novel, and we've never done a call-in format. So it'll be quite interesting to see how your strategies also work in the UK business-to-business world.
I'm happy to do this. I'm ready. Let's do this.
Excellent. Well, we'll just jump straight in. Now, just a bit of preamble. You're based in the kind of western part of Canada, right?
That's correct. Just in the Okanagan Valley, so wine country Canada.
But you're currently kind of 3 hours behind me, and now we're all heading into a cold winter, especially you.
Yeah, I'm cold right now. I'll be honest.
I mean, you're practically in Alaska, aren't you? I looked on the map.
Pretty much. We're pretty close. Yeah. Well, our temperature is pretty mild here. Like, I grew up in the middle of Canada where it goes down to, you know, minus 40 degrees Celsius, minus 50 sometimes. So it's mild here, but it still gets cold enough that, you know, I have to spend most days shoveling snow and all that stuff. So it definitely does get cold here.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I can see, I'm British, and I was kind of new to all these harsh winters that you get over in this sort of in North America. But it's not about how cold it is; it's just about how you dress, right? You don't get bad cold winters; you just get bad clothing.
100%. Like in Winnipeg, if you have a nice you block the wind, you're warm. Okay, you have enough layers, you block the wind, you're warm.
About layers.
It's totally layers. In Vancouver, you wear the same layers, and somehow that damp air just comes up and through all the layers, and you're cold all day. It never goes away.
Fantastic. Well, look, just so to help everyone get to know you, could you just give us kind of a quick overview of what it is you do and how you got to be doing it in the first place?
Absolutely. So for the last 15 years, I've been running sales, marketing, and sales development teams for high growth B2B companies. What I do now is I help these same companies smash their revenue targets with outbound sales and marketing nurture sequences. So over the course of the last 15 years, I've kind of run the gambit of running thousands of tests of, you know, what works, what doesn't, and the areas of the organizations that need the most help. So we've really kind of narrowed it down to the top of the funnel and said, most companies miss their sales targets because they don't have enough meetings booked with qualified customers. So they're right customers. And so what we've done is really focused on how we can help them build their pipeline without relying too much on automation and the things that make people feel like they're not cared for from the company, they feel like they're being sold to. So we teach people how to do a more human approach, we call it. Scale human to scaling sales and marketing.
And I mean, have you always done sort of sales? I mean, has that always been ever sort of from school?
Absolutely. It's funny you ask, is that I put myself through marketing school by selling. So I was a commissioned salesperson at night, and I used to make, you know, $200-$300 in a 4-hour shift at night. And that would help me pay for my school and my tuition and my books and all the things I needed to do to learn how to run a business and run a marketing department.
Well, that's very cool. And it's interesting what you said about the fact about putting the quality and quantity together in terms of the sort of sales pipeline, because we had a podcast recently with a fellow in the UK, a guy called Ben Potter, who said exactly the same thing. I mean, the whole show was about the qualification process and the fact that, you know, obviously it's great to have sales opportunities in numbers, but if they're not the right kind of opportunity, you're going to trip yourself up time and time again. So what I take it that where you kind of kick in is, you know, it's about treating it like a whole process. So you're actually looking at the quality and the quantity of the sales at the same time, right?
Exactly. We like to say it's, we help you get your best fit customers in the funnel.
Right. Okay. And of course, on the other end of things as well, I mean, as I alluded to in the intro, you know, is that you've got a very, very common breakdown of communications between sales and marketing teams. And, you know, it's something obviously that I think all of us who are in the world of sales, we all are very, very sensitive to it. I'm not quite so sure that people in the world of marketing feel the same, but, you know, definitely in sales, we notice that there is a sort of a lack of communication. And I venture a hypothesis about why I think it is, and then you can counter with your own if you need to. But one of the things that I've sort of found through, and this is really just because of people that I've spoken to, is that a lot of it is down to the language of the boardroom and the fact that, you know, that people in sales speak boardroomese. They speak the same language as the shareholder. You know, it's about profits. It's about, you know, numbers of sales, units sold, all that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, marketing tends to speak of things like impressions and hits and likes and stuff like that, which no shareholder on earth really has a kind of clue what that means and how that translates into sales. So, I mean, what are the common causes of marital breakdown between sales and marketing in your book? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I really like that. I do agree that it depends on the board. It depends on the boardroom. And
sure.
Some people find that likes, impressions, and brand is more important than the bottom line revenue. Not more important, but more of like some CEOs really find marketing to be the key to everything, right? And they build their companies around that. But others, most build their companies around sales, and then marketing is kind of left behind. What I find is actually the why behind this marital breakdown. It depends entirely on the organization and kind of the board structure. But the number one thing that I've seen is about silos. So it's an organizational, design around silos, where they believe that sales and marketing are supposed to be different.
Right.
And the way that plays out on the field or the bottom parts of the organization is that metrics tend to be sometimes just different or competing, and rarely are they aligned. So when marketing is focused on impressions and likes and all those things, and sales is focused on bottom line revenue, then sometimes they actually conflict. So you might have marketing that sends over a whole bunch of leads and says, hey, I'm marked based on how many leads I send over, so I'm just going to send you a ton. And then sales is marked by how many of those leads I turn into revenue. So my conversion numbers go down every time you send me another lead. And if it's not a good lead, then I'm not happy as sales, right?
You're diluting the effect every time, aren't you?
Exactly.
On the number of sales.
Exactly.
That's incredible. That's, you know, it's funny because we had exactly the same thing. It's a very, you've hit the nail right on the head, I think, as far as that's concerned. So yeah, thank you very much for doing that. That's reassured a lot of people, I'm sure. Now, I mean, the sales translate into profits, and kind of impressions tend to generate a lot of kind of heat and light, but, you know, not so much traction unless you kind of plug in the as Johnny Cash said, the adapter kit, which is you. I mean, that's what you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why do clients call you in?
So clients call me in because typically they're missing their sales targets. And mostly, like I said, because they're not booking enough meetings to actually meet their targets.
Right.
So what we do is we actually assess their sales process. We identify the drop-off points and basically gaps in the process. And then we craft highly customized and highly targeted sequences to fill the gaps. And then obviously the final thing is that we train reps and their leaders on how to actually run these sequences. Are you familiar with what a sequence is?
No, I was going to ask you, what is a sequence?
Okay. I said it twice and I'm like, this is jargon. Sorry about that. A sales sequence or a sequence is a series of a mix of sales scripts. So phone, voicemail, email, and social scripts that come together through an automated tool called sales engagement software. Right. Like outreach.io or SalesLoft. And what you do is you actually craft calculated, almost like a breadcrumb approach of a story in a series of these messages and phones and phone call touches and whatever else to help improve the chances that you're going to get a conversion. Now, where this came up is that we recognize there's been tons of studies that recognize the number of impressions it takes in order to actually get somebody to recognize you and to engage with you is increasing every day.
Yeah.
Right. It used to be you could send one sales email or make one cold call and you're going to get somebody on the phone. You have a conversation. They might be in your funnel. But now it takes multiple touches. It takes six times for somebody to even recognize your brand from seeing it. Right.
So some might say that's wearing somebody down, but it's not really, is it? I mean, we're barraged with so many sales messages all the time that occasionally, you know, one will break through and, you know, and that's where you have to be.
Exactly. And every customer is different. So some people might really be inspired by your first message. Others find it garbage, so they don't even look at it. And then maybe like the third message, all of a sudden now you're starting to speak their language. You're saying something different. It's a different part of the story that appeals more to them. And so you're able to appeal to a wider audience by doing that sales sequence instead of one perfect sales email or phone call.
So your it's a constant kind of improvement. That sequence is basically starts off on one thing and then it basically tweaks, it sort of grades itself or sort of increases in quality as it goes through, right?
Absolutely. And if you think of, I don't know if you're familiar with StoryBrand at all, but there's the typical plot or the seven plot points of a good story. And so if you're trying to tell that entire story in one message, you're bombarding them with something, what some of our prospects in the
TMI.
Past,
TMI,
terrifying emails. Yeah. Too much information, terrifying emails. One prospect called that one of my teammates that one time. It was hilarious.
Terrifying emails. That's a great thing. That's a very salesy thing. That's superb. I love that.
Yeah.
Stop sending terrifying emails.
Exactly. Don't send terrifying emails, please. I implore you. Instead, tell the story in breadcrumbs. You know, right. Tell one part of the story, then the next part of the story, then the next part. Give some anticipation. Think Game of Thrones cliffhangers. Get them to want to see the next message from you. Yeah. And by the end of it, they will respond.
That's really neat. I love that. That's a very sensible. I mean, and it, you know, it does make sense because people love a narrative. You know, we all love a narrative. So it's nice to see things and go, oh, yes, I saw the first one of those, or I saw this. You know, it's like with TV advertising. You know, it's always good when you see the next one of a series of adverts that you've seen.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah. What do your typical, I mean, obviously, you know, I live in a world of marketing, advertising, PR, digital agencies and stuff. I mean, what do your clients typically look like?
Yeah. So because we're in sales, we don't focus as much on verticals, but we focus on B2B companies. Right. So just companies in general that sell to other businesses that have sales teams and average deal size of about $5,000 or more.
Right.
The key driver here, though, is that these are companies that are motivated to push forward in their industry and grab market share through aggressive sales and marketing. So these are companies that really want to grow. They're not ones that want to sit back and then, you know, collect their cash.
They typically tend to inhabit certain spaces, don't they? I mean, those types of companies. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of tech companies working that kind of way, you know, where it's kind of rapid, high quality growth all the time, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I understand that. I mean, have you ever kind of ventured into the world of sort of the agency sort of scene at all?
Absolutely. I've actually run agencies before.
Okay.
No, I know a great deal about the industry. I know a lot about advertising. I mean, having run marketing teams for, you know, decades now, I'm very familiar with all of the terms that you mentioned previously about impressions and likes and all those things.
Sure.
And I know, and I actually incorporate the world of advertising into our sales campaigns because, one example would be if you're sending out a sales sequence and you're an individual rep sending out a sales sequence, what I encourage people to do is actually, if you look at a target list, your target prospect list, and you're sending out these sales sequences, I encourage them to take those lists and actually advertise to them at the same time. So that again, when I'm sending out an email to you, it very well might be at the same time as you're looking at your Facebook feed and you might see an ad from my company.
Okay.
Okay. So you incorporate those marketing and sales touches in a world, I'll use the term smarketing, to swarm your customer and make sure they know that you're trying to get in touch.
Right. Smarketing. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's a great one. Excellent. See, I'm already learning already. So fantastic. So, you talk of sales teams. I mean, traditionally in the world of sort of marketing and advertising and stuff like that, a sales team is probably one or two people, three people, maybe four if you're lucky. I mean, are all kind of in-house teams built the same way? I mean, are there typical sort of traits within a sales team, or do you find in your experience that they're all different? Everyone takes a bespoke approach.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, actually, because my answer to it is yes and no. There are similarities across all sales teams in general. There are certain things that exist, the same problems, the same, challenges and tactics. Some of them are very similar. But the differences lie in kind of the both experience of the sales leaders and the boardroom that we mentioned before, and the market, like who they sell to. So typically you create your sales org structure around your customer. I mean, the best sales teams do. They adjust their organization to meet the needs of the customer. So let's say, for example, if you sell a type of solution that is typically sold online, self-serve, you don't typically have a sales team. And your sales team, if you have it, tends to be ones that accept orders. So, somebody buys something online, they'll call for help. And then your sales team is to actually convert them to the sale, right? But if you're selling advertising as an example, and you're selling it to large corporations, you're more likely to have a sales team, probably a larger sales team, that are going out and actively pursuing advertisers to join their roster.
Right.
So the structure is going to change depending on what your market is, what your solution is. It actually comes down to it in the actual activities of sales, they tend to be rather similar.
Right. Okay. Well, that was something that came up as you mentioned right at the very start of that, is that a conversation I had recently about sort of how you build a sales team and how you build a company was that a great piece of advice was to find a customer, somebody that you want to as your customer, and build the sales around that one customer, so that everything that they need you provide, and then you can then take that out into a wider field, which is quite an interesting way to treat it. But it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I think it's the analysis of how you put sales together, I think tends to be very common across the board. And I know I've done it myself. I've been in sales teams and I've run sales teams, and I would say that, as a personality type, we're not exactly the most malleable. We're not exactly the most receptive to change. Do you find that sales teams these days are more receptive to change? When somebody like yourself comes in and starts to recommend changes, what are the kind of, the ways that you find what are their pressure points?
Right. No, this is a very good question too. Is what I find is that the companies that consistently exceed their quotas and consistently perform in a sales environment are the ones that adapt. If you can imagine, what we saw this year. I mean, this year was, you've heard the term unprecedented a million times. Right?
Just a couple.
But what the fact of the matter is that it takes so much to be successful in sales. And that if you don't continually work on your craft, craft your messaging, optimize things, find new ways to get in front of your customer, find new ways to engage with them, you'll get left behind. Mm-hmm. Their world is changing every day. COVID-19 has made that, exacerbated this and just made this exponentially true. But change happens for your customers, so you need to adapt to change to them. And I'll even go in a tactical level. For example, if short subject lines work really well today, it's possible that everybody that you're talking to and everybody that's trying to sell to you as the buyer is using a short subject line, And then all of a sudden, when that one person does a long subject line, they're going to stand out.
Right.
So one of my colleagues said on a podcast I hosted recently, he said, be a red dot in a sea of blue dots. And the way that you do that is actually by continuously changing your approach and adapting to not be the blue dots, to not be the same as everybody else. So I find, to sum it up, I find, the great sales organizations definitely change.
Right. They're more receptive to it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, now if that's all right with you, we come to the part of the show when we ask three of our guests to let it all out and see what good old Uncle Jeff can prescribe to help them fine tune their sales. And here we go. We're gonna give this a go. Now, first in the queue, shaking the rain off his umbrella, is a chap from a branding agency for you. So go ahead, caller.
Hi, I'm Martin Shaw from Nocamo Consulting, a specialist marketing consultancy based in the UK. My question for Jeff is as follows. Since COVID kicked off, it has limited opportunities to network at events. So the likes of LinkedIn have since become very much a battleground for audience attention. So I've been assessing other alternatives relevant to our audience of entrepreneurs, scale-ups and fast growth business owners and the like. What other B2B networking style platforms, Jeff, would you consider and why?
Thank you so much, Martin. That's a really good question. In fact, the fact of the matter is that I would recommend LinkedIn for the majority of business owners and people that are actively engaged on LinkedIn, because it is a great platform. It provides a lot of key insight that's really helpful for a sales person to find good details to make personal connections online. However, one caveat that I have here is that, is your audience on LinkedIn? One thing I found that is fairly consistent is sales team's choice of platform that they market to is dictated entirely by where their customers are. So if your customers are on Instagram and they're not on LinkedIn, then it doesn't matter how great LinkedIn tool is as a prospecting tool. You want to be on Instagram instead. And really, it's a matter of looking at your customers. If you don't know where they hang out, ask them. If you do know where they hang out, then by all means, that's where you have to be.
And it is such a great question because, you know, I mean, everybody is trying to do the same thing, and LinkedIn has become like a very crowded bus depot now. But, the other channels are worth exploring. And, I think it's just a question of keeping your finger on the pulse, watching where the market's moving and stuff. I mean, what ones do you kind of pick on? I mean, outside of LinkedIn?
Yeah, I have been finding that Instagram has become a little bit more prevalent in this. So when I sell to sales leaders, I'm finding more sales leaders are ended up on LinkedIn than previously.
Wow.
On Instagram. That's one. Facebook has been pretty good in the past, but I'm seeing a little bit more attrition there. People not focusing on Facebook as much. I can tell you though, for sales, for me selling to salespeople, LinkedIn has been the number one platform by like a long shot.
Understandable. Yeah. And I guess that, the one thing that we can rely on, although it's very slow, was that it was always designed around the idea of recruitment. But I think that now it's become much more of a sales platform. So I think they're adapting their business a lot more. There's a lot more kind of sales related support coming into it as well.
100%.
Thank you very much for that, Martin. That's great. And next up, we've got Matt Bullard. Who is he's a freelance business development consultant. So go ahead, Matt.
Hello, Jeff. Many thanks for taking my question. It's in relation to outbound prospecting, specifically the cold email. I just wanted to find out, in your opinion, what is the best type of subject title to use, obviously to get the email open, but following on from that, when it comes to the narrative of the email or sort of the email content, what should it look like? What should we be saying in there, or what shouldn't we be saying in there, to elicit the best response from a prospect, and obviously get them interested in opening up a dialogue with us. Many thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, Matt, this is probably the question I get asked the most, and I'm really sorry to offer the exact answer you don't want to hear, but it depends. A subject line not only needs to be interesting, but it also needs to be relevant to the prospect, and in general, also be at the right time for the specific thing that you're offering. For them to open, that is. We find that the more people respond to short subject lines in general, but that there are situations where longer subject lines have outperformed them.
And this is what you were just talking about before, right?
Literally just a couple seconds ago, is that the fact of the matter is, and I advise this for anybody who's trying to find the right subject line, is you can incorporate best practices, but when the simple notion of calling it a best practice means everybody knows it. So if you're doing what everybody else is doing, then you're going to make sure that think of your prospect's inbox. You're going to make sure that your email looks like everybody else's, right? So what I advise is actually A/B testing subjects and trying different things, less words, more words, incorporating first name, incorporating business name, having stats, questions versus, and refine this through a series of A/B tests of just testing the subject line, not the body of the message, to find out what is actually the best performing subject line for you.
Is there, on the A/B testing, is there a kind of a cheat that you can do with A/B testing? I mean, you know, is that the sort of thing that would be worth, instead of testing it on potential clients and prospects? Because I think one of the big problems with A/B testing, certainly in the world of advertising and marketing, where you've got a lot of relationship building going, sort of being a sort of a huge part of the sort of sale up front, is it an idea maybe to do some of that testing with, you know, friends or colleagues or something else like that? I mean, is that something you can do?
Yeah, you know what? In truth, and this is an unpopular opinion, but the truth of the matter is that this is the roll up your sleeves, do the work, get it done with your customer. Because let's say, for example, Keith, you respond well to my email. You open the subject because it's fantastic. But maybe you're not my direct prospect, right? Maybe you're not the customer that I'm trying to get in my funnel. So if you open it, that's great. It says I have an email that's interesting, but is it relevant to the person that I'm trying to sell to? And so the thing is that what you need to remember is that you're not going to turn off your customer by having a bad subject line. They're going to ignore you.
Okay, that's a very good point. So you can actually, I mean, basically what you're saying is you can actually live test these things in a live environment.
100%. 100%.
Right. Okay, and that's it.
And you'll learn over time.
That's okay. That's very good advice. I appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you. And so while we're on the subject of emails, personal question, how often is too frequent? Because it used to be the case that you'd follow up a cold email with a phone call and stuff like that. But the phone is such a kind of hit and miss option these days. I mean, when should you send a follow-up and what tone should it carry? I mean, you know, it's like, do you leave it a day, 2 days, three weeks? What's your kind of recommendation on that?
And again, this is really about finding the right frequency for you. What you want to do is adapt your sequence to the buyer journey. So the thought patterns of your buyer. A lot of people start with maybe like 3 days in between. So you send an email on Monday, then you might send a follow-up email on Thursday. And then potentially on Monday or Tuesday, you're also going to have a phone call. And you're going to mix in these different things throughout time. And then once you start doing this for, you know, dozens or hundreds of people, you'll start to see patterns of what they respond to the most, and you can adjust things. So again, through A/B testing, test one sequence that is 3 days in between, test another sequence where it's 5 days in between, and see what works.
Yeah.
That's a tactical approach, a practical thing you can do. But I'll give you a little anecdote that I heard from a colleague years ago that I absolutely love and I take it to heart to this day. He said when you're talking about prospecting to customers, you kind of want to annoy them into talking to you. Because they'll ignore you, it takes six times for them to recognize your brand. It takes more times than that to actually recognize what you do, how you can help them. So you need to really do a lot of work to get their attention.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a constant thing. But I mean, that's kind of why I was interested in asking, because, you know, it's very, I think a lot of us, certainly us in the sort of in our 40s and 50s, are kind of used to the idea of being able to usually hit the mark within one or two emails. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, there is a certain level of persistence that you need to introduce to these things, because basically, not because, and it's not a question of taking it personally, these things fall through the gap. You know, they just don't hit the mark. So that's just how it is.
Well, yeah, there's emails that are sent by people I care about that I want to talk to that I've been waiting on that sometimes I can't get to till next week.
Yeah.
And it just happens, right? Yeah. It's not what I want to happen, but I mean, we're all busy, right? Everybody has so many priorities. Some people like myself, I mean, my daughter's here right now because she can't go to daycare because she's sick because we have a pandemic, and like all these things are happening. And so people are busy, and you have to make sure you're not guaranteed to get them at the right time. So what you have to do is find ways to keep engaging so that when that right time is there, they're going to see something from you. They're going to know it's valuable and they're going to engage.
Good. No, that's great. And again, that word empathy keeps sort of cropping up. And I think it's like you just alluded to, it's hugely important. Absolutely hugely important.
There was one more thing, the second part to Matt's email or Matt's question about email, was he was talking about, he asked what is the best information to put in a cold email.
Yes.
I'll just summarize by saying this is that from continuous testing that we've done, we've been finding emails that perform the best have several common characteristics, but that there are three that really come to the top all the time. Number one is they're about the prospect, not the company. Okay. Number two, they're brief. So they might be three lines, not three paragraphs, but lines. And three, they're inspiring. So they inspire action. I have to underline that word inspire. Okay.
So go back to question one again, point one again. So it's about the prospect and not the company.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the phrase make the customer the hero?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So this is really what that's all about.
But on a personal level rather than just their position within a company. Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. I mean, there have been very successful sales emails and phone scripts that have tailored to the persona or like their role in the company. It doesn't necessarily have to be personalized,
right?
But it has to be that them as, let's say, for example, I sell to a VP of sales. So making sure that that person, so Todd, the VP of sales at ABC company, is the hero of the story. I'm right. Reaching out to help you, Todd. I'm not reaching out to talk about me. So a great analogy that I use with a lot of my customers is that imagine if I walked up to you at a party out of the blue and started telling you all about how many friends I have, how awesome I am, why my friends like me, and then asked you if I could be your friend.
Is your name Donald Trump?
It's awkward, right? Awkward. Like, imagine that somebody walks up to you at a party like that. Yeah. In a personal situation, when all a person does is talk about themselves, how do you feel?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you feel alienated. You feel like this person doesn't care about me, so why should I care about them? Right? So in a cold email, this is exactly the same thing. If all I do is say, hello, Mr. Customer, my name's Jeff. I'm the CEO of RevUp Sales, and we help companies like blah, blah, blah.
And here's how brilliant we are. Yeah.
All that's doing is saying me, me, me. And why should I care as a customer?
Right.
Right. So instead, if you say something like, if I walk up to you at the party, I see you're drinking margarita and I walk up to you and talk about, hey, Keith, that's a great choice. Like, what made you choose the margarita?
Right.
You know, I heard, I saw it on the news that said that people who drink margaritas have more friends. You know, tell me about why you chose a margarita and why you like it, you know? And immediately I start to engage you in a conversation about you, what's important to you, something that I've given you maybe some insight you haven't thought about.
Right.
And I'm engaging you in a conversation.
That's a great anecdote. I love that. I love that analogy. That's very good, Jeff. Thank you very much. That's very good. That's finally the penny's dropped. It only took 40 years, but thank you very much. Okay. So now the last of our callers is we've got Maeve Boniface, and now she's from the public relations side of the B2B world. So go ahead, Mavis.
Hi, Jeff. I'm Mavis Boniface, co-founder of United Culture, a strategic engagement agency. We help bring brands to life by creating engagement strategies and experiences for their people and customers. My question for you is, as we move to a hybrid working world with less face-to-face contact, how do we ensure we have the same impact when building relationships with new clients?
Thank you so much for that question, Mavis. This comes up a lot this year. I mean, everybody's world has been flipped upside and it's changed the way industries actually go about selling. So what's interesting is that the world is switching from into remote sales, no matter what you are. If you're in an inside sales company, now you're in your own home, you know, you're selling from your desk at your home office or from your couch or anything like that. Field sales, some companies I talk to, like in pharmaceutical sales, who are traditionally just field sales, they'll travel, they'll go to doctor's offices and they'll, you know, their entire world is about going physically to the location.
Yes.
Now they're all of a sudden doing remote sales from their home. So how do you keep business relationships solid? Well, the good news is that even though we've changed how we sell, the principles behind relationship building is still the same. So whether you're selling in person, whether you're selling online through the phone, whether you're trying to make connections on LinkedIn, the principles behind it are always the same. So I'll give you two things to think about here. In personal relationships, they're typically built on like, trust, and alignment on values, right? Business relationships are not that different, except for one thing. People do business with companies they might not like, but they need. You're not necessarily friends with somebody that you don't like, unless your wife makes you. But you don't choose your friends based on if you don't like them. But people will do business with you if they don't like you. However, they will not do business with you if you don't provide value, if you don't solve a problem for them. So if you're switching to remote sales and you're not able to build those relationships in person, what you want to do is become a source of value for the customer. You want to provide, if you don't have a big marketing team or marketing budget to create content, that's okay. You can find articles that you know are relevant to them and share it with them. You can comment on a post on something that is relevant to the solution you offer and what you can bring to the table. Offer them insights that you learned from your other customers and just be a continual value, source of value that helps them accomplish their goals. And again, makes them the hero. If you do that, doesn't matter if you're in person, at an office, or sitting in your kitchen, you will be that source. You will attract their attention. And when it comes time to actually have a business conversation, they're going to trust you and they're going to want to talk to you.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, a lot of people that we've sort of spoken to have sort of very much sort of echoed what you're talking about. And I think this all falls under the category of being useful and sort of maintaining a sense of relevancy with a prospect or with a client. And it's extraordinary because even our business model with The Advertist, which is, you know, all about sort of providing a database and news and insight with for UK brands. Now we've had to change the way that we organize our business because we need to give our clients more granularity on various sectors that they may be targeting. So no longer is it, you know, it's no longer enough just to provide, you know, contact details and news and a little bit of insight on a, on any given sector. Now we're looking at building in, you know, things like sort of financial models of the various, the financial health of various sectors and things like that, so that they actually have reasons to go back to a client and to be able to say, look, I know you work in the, say, the healthcare sector, which is doing very well at the moment, you know, predicted to be growing at such and such a percent per year, whatever, and being able to show that you're bringing them something, and that's something of value that's going to help them within their organization. So that's, you know, that's absolutely spot on, I think, you know, in terms of being valuable. But no, that's a great answer. So anything else to add for Mavis, or are you, is that it?
Yeah, you know what? We've kind of touched on it a couple times throughout this call, that engaging on social media really is the great equalizer right now. Right. If you can get good, and I mean good, like genuinely good at building a community online, and this, and I stress the term community building, because if you can get good at building your community online and providing continuous value to the community that you sell to, then they're going to want to take the time. They'll give you the time to make your pitch eventually.
That's right? It. Yeah. It's the same thing.
And if you, it's the same thing.
That is, right? that's so good. So good. But okay, well, look, it's so difficult, I have to say, just to round this off, it's so difficult on the PR side of things, because their whole business is about relationships. You know, it's one of the most, it's one of the three out of the marketing mix. It's the one that involves constant communication, constant relationship building, constant nurturing. And to suddenly have all that taken away from you, you know, makes it very, very difficult. So yeah, I do understand that. And, but I think PR companies being PR companies, they will find a way, and they will innovate, and they will show the way forward. So yeah, that's great. Well, thank you very much for that, Jeff.
Sorry, I just, like, you said something there that really clicked with me. And just to the PR people out there, is that the way that I've hired many PR companies, and the way that they've kept relevant for me, no matter what, whether I can see them or not, is they've consistently produced results for me that I can't live without. So that's really, really important. I love my PR company because they keep booking me podcasts and booking me speaking engagements when I could do that. Okay.
Yes.
That's something that was very important. And it never, like, every time I got one of those, I went, thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Claire.
Okay, well, we managed to survive that without any major technical hitches. So thanks very much, and thank you, Jeff, for doing that. And thank you to Mavis, Matt, and Martin, all the M's, for their questions. I think we could spin this out into something, Jeff. I think
absolutely.
We could weave this gold into something. Ask Jeff.
I'm game, man. Just let me know.
Excellent.
I love talking about this stuff, Keith.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, let's see if we can get something going. A little phone in, I think, would be great. But mm-hmm. So anyway, I mean, when you're not fine-tuning sales teams, I mean, how do you like to relax? I mean, we touched on it right at the very start. I mean, you've got some wonderful wilderness and untamed countryside around you. And I'm going to guess that going for a walk is a common statement in your house. But I mean, are there other ways you like to relax?
Yeah, well, I'm very lucky. As I mentioned at the start of this, I live in the middle of wine country. So I have 7 wineries within 5 kilometers of my house.
Oh, man.
So we tend to frequent those and enjoy that. I'm actually a boxing trainer as well. So I like to, completely the opposite of the relaxing winery experience, I like to get aggressive and box and teach people how to just be their best selves and be fit through boxing. So,
great.
I really, really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I spend time with my 4-year-old daughter and my wife. So,
who's not very well at the moment. Bless. Yes.
unfortunately.
But so, I mean, you're one of the you're in the camp that likes to, under lockdown, is the decided to keep fit and fine tune the old body, and that's a noble thing. That's a noble thing. It's not easy. I've done it myself, and I keep waiting for this this rush of endorphins that people say is so wonderful, but
you'll get it. You'd be mad at it, man.
I keep waiting for it to happen. I still keep thinking of pies at the end of it, but there we go.
I box because I eat pies, okay?
That's right. I had another friend that said he runs 4 miles a day, and that's so he can eat whatever he wants.
Wings and beer last night, Keith. Wings and beer last night.
Fantastic.
And you know what? It's okay, because I've got a great workout going today.
Wings and beer. Oh, man. Yeah. That's good. Now, okay, so talking of relaxing, now I'm going to throw this one at you, and I'm going to have to do this blind. Usually I like a little bit of warning, but we do this, we've got this little thing going where we're putting together a mixtape for all our guests who are picking one track that they would take with them on a desert island should they be stranded. So I'm going to just see if I can identify with it. So what is your one pick that you would take with you? Piece of music.
Piece of music. Oh, I'm going to go with what you said earlier. You referenced Pink Floyd. And I'm going to say Wish You Were Here.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I would be thinking that every day.
That is fantastic. What a great, I'm going to love stitching that one into the show. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's one of my favorite songs. And a fine album, an absolutely fine album, still stands up today. I actually put it, I think it was at the very start of this pandemic, I was putting together a little playlist, and I put Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here as probably the best album, one of the finest albums in the world. So, and it still stands up today. Always stands up. You can listen to it anytime. Doesn't make any difference.
Mm-mm. And whether I'm listening on these or yep. those giant tower speakers you might see in the background.
Oh, yes. My God.
Whatever it is, I don't care. Like, it just has this amazing... I used to sell electronics. That's how I actually put myself through school. And
so you really are a complete geek, aren't you? You the music, the tech, and the sales.
Yeah.
You geek out. You geek out.
I geek out.
Fantastic. And so what book has seen you through? I mean, any book that you would take with you? It doesn't have to be a business. It can be anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always liked Coelho's The Alchemist.
Okay, not familiar with that. Give us a quick rundown. How's that work?
It's a story of it's a personal journey about this shepherd boy who ends up going on this journey and just letting kind of life take him where he needs to go. And he builds so much wealth. He literally builds wealth. And then he builds wealth in himself. He finds the love of his life. And it's just the way that the story is told is just so engaging. And it's such a great avatar for life in business, for life in general. It really inspires you to kind of be better and just follow your own journey to where you need to go. I found that was amazingly awesome. It actually sent me to, made me leave Winnipeg, move to Miami, and then eventually moved to Vancouver to meet my wife. So wow. I've kind of followed the journey like the guy in the story, and it's done nothing but great things for me.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's nice. I mean, that'll take pride of place in our bookshelf behind, because we're creating a bookshelf that will actually sit behind everybody so that they're now broadcasting from these little Zooms and stuff. So cool. Thank you very much for that. That's great, Jeff. Thanks a lot. No problem. So what's coming up for you in the near future? Have you got any sort of momentous events that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, actually, so we host at RevUp, we host this bi-weekly event called Sequence Practice, where we get people to send in their sales sequences and nurture sequences, and we review them live on the air with expert playmakers from companies like Salesforce.com, Outreach.io, and others in the heavy in the sales space. And so we have one coming up on November 18th. We have this amazing playmaker. That's what we call our sales experts, playmakers. We have this amazing girl, Christina Finseth, who knows how to get 100% open rates on your emails, and is known for getting 10% reply rates using her FIRE framework for cold emails.
Wow. Okay. And that's on when? November?
November 18th.
November 18th. Fantastic. Well, we'll all tune in for that, and we'll put that in the show notes, and we'll make sure that can anybody join in?
Anybody can join. Welcome to anybody who wants to learn about sales. If any of our listeners here want to actually submit their work, there's a link on the landing page where you can actually submit your sales sequence or cold email or phone script and get it reviewed live on the air. So we encourage audience participation. If you send one in and we don't cover it at that particular event, we may cover it in the next event. So all are welcome.
And how did they get hold of you?
They actually get, the best way to go is to my website. It's revup90.com, REVUP90.com.
90. Lovely. Fantastic. Well, Jeff, you made it. Thank you very much indeed. That's a great piece of advice, and thank you for doing that for our audience. I'm sure they'll appreciate it. And as I say, I mean, let's see if we can build this into something, because there's got to be more than three questions out there. So so it'd be great. I think it would be very useful, and I love a lot of what you've. I'm picking up a lot of what you're putting down there, Jeff. So that's fantastic, and I know we'll love to come back and do some more stuff with you. So thank you very much. And in the meantime, you just take care of your daughter. Hope she feels better, and stay safe. And we'll see you soon. All the best.
Thanks so much, Keith. Take care. Bye.
What I love most about Jeff is his ability to create a workable structure for the selling process. A lot of us, myself included, just wing it, and that can create equal amounts of damage and benefits. Using Jeff's methods seems like a much better option. My thanks to Jeff, and if you need to get hold of him, all his contact details are in the show notes, or you can check him out on LinkedIn and all the usual channels. My thanks also go to Martin, Mavis and Matt for their questions and for putting Jeff to the test. Well done, great subjects one and all. More thanks go to Jeremy Davis for yet another blistering monologue, and to the team behind the show, that's Donna, Matt Smith and the in-house band The Prospectors. So join us next time on The Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be serving up another nourishing gourmet course of sales wisdom, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?